All right, then. So, ready to dive into some surprising history?
Always up for a good story. What have we got today?
Today, we're digging into the British-Mexican Society and specifically how it came to be. We've got this historical account from 1982 as our guide. And let me tell you, even we were surprised by what we found.
Oh, color me intrigued. Lay it on me.
Okay, so picture this. London, 1942. Air raids, blackouts, the whole Blitz situation, right?
Right, a city on edge.
Exactly. And into this pressure cooker walks the new Mexican envoy, ready to start his post.
You'd think they'd roll out the red carpet, what with the wartime solidarity and all.
Right. But no, his car breaks down on the way from the station. And to add insult to injury, nobody's even there from the Foreign Office to officially welcome him.
Oh, talk about a rough first day on the job.
Right. Sets the stage for the whole, well, it kind of highlights the actual relationship between Britain and Mexico at the time.
Which was not great, I'm guessing.
Not exactly best mates,
Yeah.
no. Which might seem odd, right? Because weren't they both, on the same side fighting against Hitler?
Well, yes, eventually. But to understand the tension, we've got to rewind a bit back to 1938.
Okay, so pre-war, what happened?
So, 1938, Mexico, under President Cárdenas, makes a big decision. They decide to take control of the foreign oil companies operating within their borders. Expropriation, it's called.
So basically saying these resources are ours now.
Exactly. Now, on the one hand, you can understand a country wanting control over its own resources.
Sure, makes sense. But how did Britain feel about it?
Not thrilled. They understood the whole nationalization thing, but they argued that Mexico wasn't offering enough compensation to the companies they were essentially kicking out.
Ah, so it gets sticky.
Very sticky. And it wasn't just about the money either. It was a point of principle. And those can get really messy in international diplomacy.
So it's like, you broke up with me, fine, but at least give me back my favorite sweatshirt.
Exactly. And to make matters worse, there was also this lingering issue of unpaid debts dating back to the Mexican Revolution. Remember that 1935 agreement to settle British claims?
Vaguely, what happened?
Mexico missed a payment, and Britain saw it as part of a pattern. Like, okay, first the oil, now this, you're not reliable. And they weren't mincing words about it either.
Ouch. Diplomats can be brutal when they want to be.
Oh, they can cut deep with a carefully worded statement.
So what happened next? Did they just stop talking to each other?
Pretty much. Mexico was offended by the accusations. They withdrew their ambassador from London. Diplomatic relations were cut off, just like that.
Wow. And this is all happening in 1938, right?
The world is on the brink of war, and these two can't even pick up the phone and call each other.
Talk about bad timing.
The worst. But here's where it gets interesting. Fast forward to 1940. A new president, Camacho, takes office in Mexico,
Okay.
and suddenly there's this renewed interest in patching things up with Britain.
So, change of heart, change of strategy, what prompted the shift?
That's the million-dollar question, because instead of going through official channels, it all starts with this letter, right, from this guy, Mr. Hansen.
Mr. Hansen, okay.
Yeah, and the letter is basically confirming a message from the Mexican foreign minister saying something like, "Hey, our new president is open to talking again."
So imagine you're in the British Foreign Office and this letter shows up.
Right. Like, is this legit? Is this some kind of trick?
I'd be checking for invisible ink for sure.
Right. But here's the thing. The foreign minister apparently confirmed the message himself during a phone call.
Okay, so a little more official, but still, a phone call. Why not a telegram or something?
That's what's so strange, because the call wasn't to some high-ranking official. It was to a guy named H.G. Wells.
Wait a minute. As in the H.G. Wells, the science fiction writer.
Not the H.G. Wells, no. Which makes the whole thing even weirder.
Okay, I'm officially hooked.
Yeah.
Who was this other H.G. Wells, and why was the Mexican foreign minister calling him?
Honestly, that part's still a bit of a mystery. Even in the historical accounts, they don't really know.
Wild. So what did the British do?
Well, somebody in the Foreign Office decided to take a chance. They recognized that, despite the odd approach, mending fences with Mexico could be valuable, especially with a world war already happening. Who knew what the future held?
Makes sense. It's like
Oh.
that old saying, the enemy of my enemy.
Right. Sometimes you got to be pragmatic.
Totally. But it wasn't just backroom deals and secret phone calls, right? What role did the Mexican people play in all of this? Were they on board with burying the hatchet?
They were. There was this huge groundswell of support for Britain among everyday Mexicans. Like, one quote from their foreign minister at the time really stuck with me. He basically said that any nation fighting for liberty with such heroism as England was at that time already has a spiritual connection with free people everywhere.
Wow. So even amidst a world war, with everything going on, there's this sense of solidarity, this recognition of a shared fight.
Exactly. It's a good reminder that while governments might propose, it's often the people who forge those bonds of friendship.
Totally. So we've got this groundswell of public support. We've got some back-channel diplomacy happening. Were those severed ties actually mended?
They were, and surprisingly quickly, too. By late 1941, less than a year after that mysterious phone call, the British Foreign Office signaled they were open to reconciliation.
So less than a year to go from, don't call us, we'll call you, to let's be friends again.
Basically. By October, they appointed a new minister to be sent to Mexico City, Charles Bateman, and Mexico chose Licenciado Alfonso de Rosenzweig Diaz as their man in London.
Wait a minute. Rosenzweig? This is the same guy whose car broke down when he arrived, right?
The one and only. Talk about a full circle moment.
It's kind of like fate, isn't it? He arrives under less than ideal circumstances, but little does anyone know he's about to play a key role in bringing these two nations closer.
It really does feel like destiny, especially because Rosenzweig had a vision for this post that went beyond just, you know, smoothing over diplomatic wrinkles. He wanted something more, something to really solidify the bond between the British and Mexican people.
He wasn't just there to make nice. He was thinking bigger picture. But how do you even begin to build that kind of a lasting connection, especially with a world war raging around you?
Well, Rosenzweig had an idea, and it all started with a society. But not just any society.
A society, huh? Sounds
a little on the nose.
Maybe? Like a bit formal for a guy who wants to build bridges between cultures?
You might think so, but Rosenzweig, he was a smart cookie, a real diplomat. He knew that if you want something to last, you need structure. You need buy-in.
From both sides.
Exactly. And let's be honest, a little gravitas never hurts.
Okay, true. So how does a society bring all of that?
Well, think about it. You've got a constitution, you've got meetings, events.
You've got that air of, like, we're not just messing around here.
Exactly. And get this. Before he even got any kind of official green light, Rosenzweig started reaching out to British contacts, drumming up support for his society idea.
Wait, so he's building momentum before getting the... Okay, that's bold.
That's Rosenzweig. And you want to know who he contacted first? Not some cultural organization, not a group of academics. He went straight to the British Foreign Office.
After that whole oil and debt debacle, talk about gutsy.
Right. But he knew that if this society was going to work, he needed the government on board.
And what did they think?
Well, remember all those carefully crafted diplomatic words we talked about?
Oh, yeah.
Apparently, Rosenzweig's original draft of the society's aims mentioned coordinating all activities related to British-Mexican relations.
Right.
And the Foreign Office, they weren't too keen on playing second fiddle to this new society.
So they pushed back a little.
Just a tad. They suggested that encourage might be a more, shall we say, diplomatically appropriate term.
Subtle, but I bet it matters.
Oh, absolutely. But the point is, they were engaged. And eventually, yeah, they gave Rosenzweig the thumbs up.
So the society is a go.
It's a go. Except... just as things are getting started, something major happened.
Oh, don't tell me another international incident. What now?
Well, remember how we talked about Mexico warming up to the idea of joining the Allied forces?
Yeah, joining the war effort.
Right. Well, in May of 1942, they made it official. Mexico declared war on the Axis powers.
Talk about timing. Right when Rosenzweig is trying to launch a society for peace and understanding, war breaks out.
Well, Mexico joins the war, but yeah. Point is, it was a pivotal moment.
I bet. And this is where Rosenzweig's vision really shines through, because he didn't see this as a setback. He saw it as an opportunity.
Exactly.
Okay, I've seen the wheels turning here.
Yeah.
How did he use this to his advantage?
Think about it. This wasn't just Mexico symbolically siding with the Allies. This was a declaration that they were ready to fight, to stand shoulder to shoulder with Britain.
A very tangible expression of solidarity.
Right. And I bet that resonated with the British people.
Absolutely. So amidst all of this, the British-Mexican Society is officially born.
June 5th, 1942.
Wow. Can you imagine that first meeting? London, still under threat of air raids, the future uncertain. And yet you've got this group of people coming together with this shared vision of building bridges. It's pretty powerful.
It really is. And it wasn't just any group of people either. The first chairman was J.B. Trend, a respected professor from Cambridge.
Okay, so they mean business.
Oh, yeah. And remember Maria Luisa Arnold, the one who was supposed to greet Rosenzweig at the station, but, you know.
Life got in the way.
Right. Well, she was there, too, front and center, part of this whole thing.
I love that. It really speaks to this idea that even small acts of kindness, they can have this ripple effect.
Totally. So, okay, they've got their first meeting, some influential names on board, but how do they go from a meeting to an actual functioning society? They got busy, they organized lectures, they started publishing newsletters.
Newsletters? Hold on. Wasn't paper rationed during the war?
It was. But somehow they managed to publish a 4-page broadsheet called the British Mexican News.
Wow. Dedicated. When did that start?
November 1943. So yeah, they were serious about getting the word out.
What kind of stuff did they cover?
All sorts. Political analysis, cultural pieces, you name it. All designed to, you know, foster understanding between the two countries. They even shared a message from Mexican school children sent to the children of Britain.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah.
Did they keep those messages on file by any chance? I'd love to see one.
Right. Wouldn't that be amazing? But it's those little details, you know, those human touches that really make this whole story come alive.
Totally. Because it's not just about treaties and diplomatic maneuvers. It's about people.
Yeah.
Connecting with each other across borders.
Exactly. And it's a good reminder that even in the darkest of times, there's always room for hope, for building something better.
It's amazing, isn't it, how these, like, personal stories, they kind of intertwine with this bigger picture of history, you know?
Totally. It's easy to get caught up in the wars and treaties and forget about the actual humans working behind the scenes.
Right. And speaking of humans working behind the scenes, didn't we leave off with Rosenzweig trying to get Churchill to one of the society's events?
We did.
Which felt like a bit of a long shot, to be honest.
It did. But you got to hand it to Rosenzweig. The guy was determined. From the moment he arrived in London, he had his eye on that prize. He wanted Churchill to see what he was building, to understand just how important this British-Mexican bond could be.
He was playing the long game.
Oh, absolutely. First that telegram right after Pearl Harbor, then that luncheon for Eden, the foreign secretary.
But Churchill said no to those.
He did. Politely, of course, but it was a no. Even that invitation to visit Mexico.
Busy schedule, saving the world, all that.
Right. But here's the thing about Rosenzweig. He didn't give up.
So wait, are you telling me he actually pulled it off? He got Churchill to a British-Mexican Society event.
He did. June 1944. Mark your calendars, folks, because this is one for the history books.
Okay, tell me everything.
So picture this. Rosenzweig, now officially the Mexican ambassador to Britain.
Promotion.
Right. He hosts this luncheon, right? And the guest of honor, Winston Churchill.
No way. This wasn't just a casual pop in for tea kind of thing, was it?
Oh, no. This was a strategic gathering of, like, major diplomatic players. Rosenzweig, he invited representatives from all the Latin American countries that had joined the fight against the Axis.
He went big.
He did. And it's brilliant when you think about it, because he wasn't just celebrating a friendship between two nations. He was showcasing this whole hemisphere standing together.
Unity in the face of, you know, fascism.
Yeah.
Powerful.
Exactly. And for Rosenzweig, I mean, this must have felt like a huge personal victory. Years of work, those bold moves. It all led to this moment.
With Churchill himself there to witness it.
Right. The importance of the British-Mexican Society officially recognized. But it wasn't just about those high-level meetings, you know.
Right, they had their projects and such.
Exactly. They were organizing lectures. They were publishing those newsletters we talked about. They even shared recipes.
Recipes. Hold on. Like, wartime recipes.
Yep. Trying to help with the food shortages in Britain after the war.
So, like, how to stretch your rations with a little Mexican flair.
Exactly. They had one for something called Mexican hot pot, meant to, you know, help your corned beef go further.
Corned beef hot pot. Now, that's not exactly tacos, but yeah. I'm sure it was a nice change from the usual wartime fare.
I'm sure it was. But that's what I love about all these details, you know, the recipes, the newsletters, those messages from the school children. It reminds you that at the heart of this whole thing, it really is about people connecting.
It is. It's about those human connections that go beyond politics, you know.
Totally. And it makes you wonder, what will the legacy of the British-Mexican Society be? Will future generations carry that torch?
Such a good question. And speaking of the future, the account we've been diving into, it ends on this very interesting note.
Oh, how so?
Well, they suggest that maybe one day, a future British Prime Minister will become an honorary member of the Society.
Really?
They even suggest waiting for the Society's centenary in 2042.
How about that? It's like they're leaving us with a challenge, you know? A reminder that the story, it's not over.
And maybe one day, years from now, somebody else will be digging through these archives, just like we were.
Right. And they'll be just as captivated by this story.
this unlikely friendship, born in the middle of a world war.
The power of connection.
Yeah.